You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey everyone, in keeping with the theme that 2022 feels a lot like 2020, here's another favorite episode from the archive with Miss Ashley Park. Ashley is star of both the Broadway stage and the small screen, including Girls 5 Eva and everyone's favorite pleasure, Mon Ami, Emily in Paris. We hear in this episode about Ashley's humble beginnings, her toughest challenges, and how she stumbled into the Tina Fey universe. Emily in Paris has been recently picked up for two more seasons, and in this conversation, she had just learned about the second season getting the green light. And if you haven't binged Emily in Paris yet, please do, for a chance to see and hear Ashley's incredible voice and musical performance. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of my first show. We have someone very special today. Why is she special? Well, she has had a really exciting, pandemic showbiz existence with television shows that are streaming, television other shows that are being announced, as well as her glorious beauty phantasmus that is Miss Ashley Park. Hello.
Yay, hi.
I'm so happy to be here with you because, first of all, I mean, you are a Broadway favorite. You are an Eva Price favorite. And I know
you're an Ashley favorite. And whenever I see you at like an opening and stuff like that, it's always like, oh my gosh, a safe space. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. And like, you have had a meteoric rise since I met you in such an amazing way. And
we met K-pop, right?
We met during K-pop. So we're talking like 2017, which is like going on 3 years. And, you know, that's when Trump was taken office. So a lot can happen, as we know, in three years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it has been kind of incredible to watch this growth, yet every time I see you, you're so grounded and real and honest and authentic and lovely. And you're why I wanted to do this show, frankly, because I want to know about all your early beginnings and I want to get into it.
I was going to ask you not to like turn the tables for a second, like at the beginning of the interview, but I was just wondering, like, you know, when you asked me to do this, I thought what a cool concept that you're asking about people's first shows and stuff. But in, you know, as people are doing podcasts and stuff now, I'm wondering like why you decided to use this angle or why you were curious about this with people.
Yeah. So at 8 o'clock Tuesday through Saturday, I would usually be somewhere other than my living room under normal circumstances.
Right.
I am a Tony voter. I am a Broadway producer. If I'm not in tech or at a preview of my show, I'm at someone else's show.
That's so true. Yeah.
Right. And so like I started to have, and thank you for asking this. It's very sweet. I started to have a little bit of like a visceral effect of being home every night, watching television or reading or being on the phone or cooking. And, you know, I got to give credit where credit's due. My girlfriend, who you know.
Jen Lever. God, I love her. Is she there with you? Will you tell her hi?
She's not in the podcast studio, but I will give her your best.
Okay.
You know, she and I were talking and we love podcasts. And I had always said I wanted to host one. And she was like, why don't you? Why don't you just do it? And why don't you do it about the thing you love, which is theater? And because I am someone who grew up in theater, I grew up going to shows as a kid. I was in shows as a kid. My history with shows really has informed
my
Oh, yeah, that photo of you when you were young in that one school, that play. Oh, my God, I died.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm that same wide-eyed girl. I mean, that's that's really the thing. I've remained the fan and the and part of the crowd, even though it's my day job.
Well, I think that's what makes you a good producer. And you you know, you feel that when it's like very genuine, and then you feel like you're being taken care of as an actor, you know.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Thank you. And so that was really the impetus. Is I was depressed and I was sad and I missed being with actors and writers and creatives and talking about theater. And I was feeling very nostalgic for my past. And so thus the show was born.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I think you're a perfect person for one of these things, just because I think you know so much about the industry and you're in it, but also again, like you're somebody who's very easy to be comfortable around in the industry. So I think that makes for a good podcast host.
And I didn't even pay you to say that. So thank
I know.
You. Thank you. Well, so, you know, it is strange times. It is perhaps a bit of a positive time with perhaps vaccines coming our way and new presidents. So yeah. I think I know my shoulders are relaxed. A tad bit today, but it has been the strangest 10 months of our lives. So I need to start every podcast with the same question. And that's how are you?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, what you just said, it's like definitely the most hopeful chapter in this entire time. And like, again, like I think the word unprecedented is just so like, it really is that for everybody right now. I'm good. You know, I think every day is kind of like a reflection on where you are right now. Yeah. And I've been like, I'm so grateful for this, but I really have been going so nonstop for a long time. And I have just been trying to make the most of this time. And I you know, you've seen me around. I think I'm an extremely social person and extremely what people would consider extroverted. And I've realized in this time that I'm a very extroverted introvert. It's been good for me to have time alone and, you know, not to delve too deep, but I've been through this before when I, you know, I had cancer in high school. And so it's interesting when a lot of people ask at the beginning of quarantine, you know, how are you feeling through this and everything like that. And it's interesting because I think I gained a tool set in being quarantined alone in high school. I was inpatient for about 8 months. And what was interesting was that at that time I was, my world stopped and everyone else got to keep going with their lives. So in a way this is almost easier because everyone has been put on pause, everyone's world. And not that I would prefer that to just my world being put on pause, but I do think that I've been grateful and lucky to have been able to be there for a lot of people in my life, especially people in our industry, and try to give some kind of hope in that way, just because I've been in the position where I've been at a young age where I was like, I really can't see past this. Like, I don't ever imagine a world where I'm not in this hospital bed alone. Yeah. And like, I'm here past it, you know? So I do think that, you know, when you kind of meet people and you understand right away, oh, they get it. Like they just get the world, they get it. And it's usually because, and you know, everyone's been through shit, pardon my language, but you know, everyone's been through hard times and like some people come out on the other side knowing how to move forward. And I think that I'm actually really hopeful now, especially with, you know, Biden and Harris taking office and such, that I think that we can all be at that point on the other side together. And we're all just going to be seeing each other very differently. And there is a world where we come out much stronger, but I think it's just still the little of anxiety of like, what if it goes the other way, you know? So that was a big way of saying, I think I'm good.
Well, it's funny because the word resilience has been coming up constantly throughout this, right? Like those who are able to function best are the resilient ones. Those who are able to get through this are frankly the introverted extroverts, actually, because they don't mind being alone and they know how to create presence and energy when they have the opportunity to do so. So I'm actually so I actually understand that having been through a type of trauma that you've been through and survived and excelled after it, that like this trauma is sort of okay. Not right. old hat.
It's kind of like when your friend, like when your best friend goes through like heartbreak and you're like, I see what you're feeling. And when you get on the other side, like I have faith that you're going to get on the other side of it, but it's sometimes they can't see that. And I feel that way kind of. And I think resilient is exactly the word. And I think that, again, not even as the cancer survivor, but as an artist and someone in this industry, I think the artist community is actually must thrive on resilience, because a big percentage of our world is disappointment and rejection. Mm-hmm. And it's the perspective of not seeing it that way that allows us to continue, you know, and be excited to continue. So I do think that I am hopeful for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really funny that because a lot of people did this, whether they, you know, had to because of financial means or wanted to because of emotional means, they went home and they lived with family and they sort of lived this like, you know, high school or growing up world with, you know, parents, but as adults. I love that you did that.
It was completely by accident. Like I am such a believer now, and I don't think I'm fatalistic, meaning I don't think things are predetermined for us. I think that's very not giving to like any possible growth or change really, but I do believe in fate. Yeah. And it was just it's so crazy how the beginning of pandemic kind of like folded out for me in terms of, mm-hmm. I had just closed Grand Horizons, our play on Broadway. I think it was one of the last plays or shows, yeah. if not the last show to get its official closing before Broadway shut down. So we got to close that. And I had a couple weeks before Millie was going to start. And so my sister had been teaching in China for 3 years, and I've been on a Broadway schedule and filming in different places. So my parents and my sister and I had not been in the same room together for about 3 years. Cause you know, Broadway schedule, we'd also don't get holidays and such. Yeah. So I was heading to LA for some work and stuff before Millie started. And on my way there, I was going to stop in to see my parents, and my sister was going to be able to be there. So we're like, great, we get 2 days together. And the day that I landed, that was the day that Broadway shut down. Oh, and so God. We're like, oh, great. So I guess the 2 days, it turned into 2 months, where we all went from not seeing each other for 3 years to living together. And, you know, like for me, you know, it was crazy because my parents and I was so grateful because, you know, I hadn't realized that, you know, every time I see my parents have been so supportive of me, but whenever they come to visit, it's just the high pressure times. It's when I have no energy or time. It's usually an opening or something like that, or I'm doing double duty or something. And so to be able to like actually spend time with them and was something I didn't really even get to do in high school or in college. So like, I think accumulatively that 2 months was more time than all of us have spent in our lives. So that was really, I'm so grateful for that.
And were you totally reliving like high school dynamics of like everyone fighting and like you leaving socks out and
oh my gosh. Well, not at first. I think because we were so aware that we are all of a sudden in a 2-bedroom apartment, you know, and like we did it. And again, like my high school experience was like me being sick for a year, you know, and being away. So like we, of course, you know, everything that we needed to uncover and discover as a family came out. Mm-hmm. And I do think like even in the tough moments, we were all like acknowledging that this was only going to make us better in the long run. But it was very crazy. You know, and also I'm such a different person than I was in high school. So it was that too.
Well, I love that this show actually is diving back into your past, into your history, into your first. And the fact that I didn't know this, that you had had this time with your family where you got to literally relive some of your first. Yeah. So let's jump in. What was the first show you ever saw?
Yeah, I think the first, what's funny is like, I never saw a Broadway show or like had been to New York City until like my last year of high school. And mm-hmm. so for me, Broadway, like what was equivalent to Broadway in my mind was like the public high schools productions in Ann Arbor, Pioneer Theater Guild's shows. Mm-hmm. And I remember, because I was really like fairly late to the game in terms of musical theater, like I guess not really late, but like middle school is when I really like followed my friends to musical, like community musical theater. It was like Young People's Theater in Ann Arbor, and mm-hmm. really loved it so much. But I remember as a middle schooler seeing those shows and then going to see shows at in Detroit, like tours that came through. Yep. And I think I might have seen a production of like The Producers, but Wicked was a big one for me. When I saw Wicked, their tour in Detroit, maybe it was Chicago. Yes, we went to Chicago sometime in middle school and I saw Wicked and another show, but I really think the shows that I saw at the high school had a big impact on me. And it just seemed so large, like it was such a big auditorium, and all I wanted to do was be in those productions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. I saw Summer Stock all like growing up, and to me that was Broadway. Like, how could Broadway be any better? Was there a particular high school production that you just really remember?
I think I saw Les Mis there, and the ones I remember are Les Mis, Beauty and the Beast, and then I saw at the other high school, I went to go see a production of Into the Woods. And I mean, that is, I think Into the Woods and Les Mis had a huge impact on me, and I loved Sondheim after that. I think it's the reason Into the Woods and Wicked especially had a and actually Les Mis had an impact on me is they're all stories about a character that is perceived as evil, you know, and it's like it's their story. And it really like fascinated me. And Into the Woods being like, I got to intermission, thought it was over. And then there's the whole second act. And these are all characters like Cinderella and stuff that I'd known. And to see a different version of it was so mind blowing to me. And it's probably why I love revivals or like reinvestigating stories that we know and characters that we know. Cause like, you just never know what is the reason that somebody is who they are. And I think that's why those shows really had an impact on my brain, I think, as much as my heart. And so I think that that's what excited me about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny in retrospect that like freshmen play fun teen. Right.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is that she was pretty young. You know, you see like, yeah, usually like Fantine is a part that you would give to someone in their late 20s or early 30s. And you're like, wait, no, Fantine was like a teen mom, you know, but you need that. But she also was a teen that had so much life experience at that age. And that's why you need someone who's had that kind of life experience to be able to play that part well.
Yeah. 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 I just, in retrospect, as I grew up and got to know these shows, I'm just always like, I can't believe high school kids
play like Captain Von Trapp. I mean, that's the main thing I tell like students now, like in college and high school. I'm like, don't try to play like, just because you're playing these parts in high school and college does not mean like no middle schooler should be playing Captain Von Trapp. And like, you know, like, and like these parts and like Anything Goes and stuff like that. You're like, these are adult roles, but it's very sweet.
Yeah. No, some of my favorite memories actually is of the Jimmy Awards performances, where you see these high school kids. You see like six Jean Valjeans doing their song, or their Javert Suicide, and you're just like,
or even like, isn't your picture from like Annie? I'd like, my favorite is like when people do like productions of Annie, and the Daddy Warbucks is the same age as the Annie. And they're like singing the adoption song, like together at last. And you're like, you are the same age.
Perhaps shorter, because boys don't grow as fast as girls at that age.
I know, yeah.
No, you're so right. Oh, that's hilarious.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What was the first show you were in?
I think it was, I mean, if we consider, I was in like dance recitals since I was three and such. And so I definitely consider those shows. But in terms of musicals, my first show was our Thanksgiving play at Bryant Elementary School. And
were you the turkey?
I was in second grade. No, I was Betsy.
Betsy
Ross. Fictional character. No, she's just a girl named Betsy. And I believe the plot was, and I think I wore like this Winnie the Pooh brown little jumper. And I believe what, if I remember correctly, I had left school for about a week because my grandfather had passed right before Thanksgiving. And so I went to California for that funeral. And then I came back and my second grade teacher, Mr. Dorr, was like, we're doing this play. And him and the music teacher put it together. And he was like, you're going to be the lead, Betsy. And I was like, wow, I didn't even audition. Like, what? No. But I think it's because he knew. I was the kid who like could not raise her hand in class. I was just so loud and everything. But definitely like a little showman. But I think the plot was that Betsy had a night. Like it's Thanksgiving weekend. And she was like, I can't wait to eat turkey. Yum. And then she falls asleep. And then everybody, like the turkeys come and try to kill her because they're upset that she's going to eat the turkey. And so all the other second graders were in like paper bags dressed as turkeys and they all were running after me. And then I sang, my big solo was Help by the Beatles. And that was my first musical, I'm pretty sure.
No, I'm pretty sure that's like an LSD trip about tryptophan, actually.
That's exactly that it. Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's probably where they came up with it.
Someone got very high one night after eating turkey.
Yeah, right. But I was like, oh my gosh, wow, this song that I know, Help by the Beatles, is furthering the story. Like this is so easy to sing because it's part of the plot. Like, so I would consider that my first musical, even though it has never been done since. And probably I don't even know what it's about, but.
Until you revive it.
Right.
And then what happened? So you went to public high school as well and then went to college for theater?
Yeah. Well, I think what happened was I did know that I loved singing and dancing, but that was the extent of my musical theater. And then in middle school, sixth grade, I followed some of my friends, because I was also a huge choir geek, like loved choir, a cappella groups, to the Young People's Theater. They were having auditions for Alice in Concert. And still, I'd never seen a musical, really, you know? Yeah. And I remember getting my first call back and going through that process. And I believe the role I played was the unicorn. Honestly, Alice in Concert is a lit show. I don't know why. I've never heard of anyone doing it. But I was like, these songs are fun. And also, like, I don't know. So that was my first musical. And then I think later that year we did The Wiz and I played Dorothy again, not something that, you know, but I think I remember just like getting a kick out of having to come in with this 16 bar. And I thought, I'm realizing right now, my gosh, I think my go-to audition song was Comedy Tonight, which I didn't know was a male song. And I would just have different movements and different expressions for like something familiar, something peculiar, like all this. I had a top hat and a glittery vest. Like it was really, it's really cliche now that I think about it. But yeah, before that, like in elementary school, it was just like the talent show. I think I did like that one song, a song from Annie with a friend. But you know what's funny is I always made a friend do it with me. I made my friend Max, who did play Captain Von Trapp in our later production of middle school. I made him sing Let Me Entertain You with me for our fifth grade talent show with the glitter vest and a cape and choreography. And like, poor guy. I don't know. Like,
where's anyway, Max now? Is he sane and healthy?
Yes. He's the best. No. Okay. But middle school is when, you know, I did all sorts of like Joseph Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat and Sound of Music. It's when I started really listening to cast recordings. We did Seussical and I got obsessed. Like that's where the cast recordings is really where I found my love of musicals. And I think it's because I grew up with Suzuki piano, which is the technique where you have to listen for just as much as you practice every day. And then it like then you can kind of envision it. And it really helps you learn the music because you already know what the melody is supposed to sound like and everything. But I think that's why I was so obsessed with constantly listening to cast recordings and like taking that in and memorizing it in that way before I'd audition. Right. And be in the show and just like envision it in that way. And then high school, I went to Pioneer. And that's where I kind of, if lucky for me, since it is in the same town as the University of Michigan, which is where I eventually went to school. It's funny, there's a whole generation of U of M students who are about 8 years older than me. And they were all of my directors in high school. So were a lot of my mentors, like Itai Ben Shlomo, like directed me in two different shows, and Benton Whitley, and a bunch of people. And a lot of them had friends who'd come, you know, so them and Susan Hurwitz, who was in charge of that theater program. And she's not a performer at all, but she was just so loves the kids there. And it truly was a public school and just an after school program. But we were at our high school that did a lot of the workshops of like the first Willy Wonka, the first Miss Saigon, the first like year in town that's for high schoolers. And so that's how I kind of really, really got into it. And I think that after I was sick, when I got out, Millie was the show that I did when I came out. And I believe I was not supposed to return to school. And it was about 3 months. I mean, it's insane. I really, no wonder my parents were so worried. But like, you know, I'm like this bald girl who like isn't supposed to be walking and I'm doing Millie. But I mean, that's where I don't think there was like an aha moment where I was like, now I will be doing musical theater. But it just, since then, even to this day, I'm kind of just constantly like in the present moment being like, wait, what? Cool. You know, let's just keep going.
Yeah. I love that Millie has such a meaningful place in your life from playing. I mean, yes, you didn't get to play it this time because of this pandemic, but you will. And Millie meant so much to you then. Like that's remarkable.
It was pretty crazy. I'm sure you know Lear, who's just the best.
Yeah,
best. And we are, you know, I'm actually zooming with Janine and Dick. We've been working on the script a lot throughout this time, which is really, really exciting. But when she had approached me about playing the role, she had no idea I had any sort of history with it. And I hadn't even thought about it too. Cause again, it was one of those roles where I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy. It was the CD I listened to the most besides Wicked. Wow. And I really grew up on that and doing that show and like dancing and singing in that way, like really, it was my first really lead too, you know, and really changed me. And when I told her it's just like a show, like Millie is such a survivor too, you know?
Totally.
So she couldn't believe, we both couldn't believe that out of all the people she knew, she was like, I just feel like you're Millie, you're the Millie that I want to work with. And so that was very impactful. And honestly, like the wigs I wore in that show, both the short one and like the long one were all made of my own hair. They were the ones that I shaved off of my hair at the beginning of my cancer treatments. And I was actually, when I was going home at the beginning of pandemic, I was picking up one of those wigs to bring back to wear, you know, but like, and I didn't want to make this show. We didn't really talk about it. Cause I was like, I don't want to make this about that. But when we recently did a Zoom reading just to kind of hear this new, what the rhythm was and what this new version was. And like, I was like, wow, I haven't spoken these words for over a decade now. And it's just so crazy to like be the woman that I am now and doing, you know, it's very full circle in a way that is bigger than me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is beautiful. Well, I had wanted to see your Millie before all this, but I assure you there's no way I'll be missing it after all this. First professional show, Ashley, what was it?
Professional. I believe, well, I got my equity card at Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera, PCLO, because in college, you know, something we all did at U of M was like everybody would go down and audition at these different summer stocks. But I believe the summer before my freshman year of college, I had done Miss Saigon at my high school my senior year. And they were doing Miss Saigon at the Music Theater of Wichita. That summer. And so one of our professors who also works there was like, oh, she has to be Kim in the Miss Saigon there. But I think that they were like, how could we trust a high schooler to be the lead in our summer stock show. So I ended up just being in the production and being the understudy, which I think is hilarious now because I'm like an understudy for a two week summer stock run is hilarious. Like, thanks for that. But so that was my first like professional gig, but I got my equity card through PCLO.
Okay. I love PCLO.
Oh my gosh, me too. And like, honestly, like, I think the first summer that I worked there where I got my equity card, we were also doing Miss Saigon. They did a small tour of Miss Saigon through like Toronto and Schenectady and mm-hmm. Pittsburgh and stuff. So that was that year. But the next year was when I did the full season. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that, you know, that's when I met Elizabeth Stanley, who's in Jagged Little Pill. Like, she was, we did Jekyll and Hyde mm-hmm. together. And I was, I mean, my favorite thing is that Corey Cott mm-hmm. and I mean, Corey was actually supposed to be my Jimmy in Philly, which is another full circle because we got our equity cards together. He had been in that Miss Saigon, and then we did the next season together. And we were dance partners. We were the featured dancers in every show, which is so funny now. But like, we were like, why are we the dancers? But we, I mean, I got super close to that. You know, it's where I understood how to be like an on, like really, like I loved being an ensemble member. I loved learning shows so fast. And then like people like Elizabeth, wow. And Rob Cuccioli and like Brian O'Malley, you know, like all of them would come and do this summer stuff, you know, and it, and now being somebody who would, I don't know, like it was very like, those were like, oh my gosh. And I still think so highly of them, but it was such a far and attained thing to be like a yeah. Broadway actor who comes and does these shows, you know? So I learned so much and like Liz Calloway came, we did this like Andrew Lloyd Webber show called Love Changes Everything. And uh-huh. just to like get to meet these people and also kind of see how lovely and humble so many of them could be. I think it really, really had a good impact on me.
Well, that's a good place to get your start. Pittsburgh's a lovely town.
Yeah, it was fun.
I'm a big fan.
It was really fun.
So it's dream time. This is where I ask if you could be in any show, anywhere, at any time, what would it be?
Well, that's hard.
I know. It is hard.
You know why? I think, okay, well, this is kind of a cliche, non-specific answer, and then I'll tell you why the question's hard.
Okay.
Firstly, I think I would, you know, I've only been to London like twice. And there's something about, and maybe just because it's something I love things that scare me and are challenging. And I've really haven't delved into the world of Shakespeare yet. Like, I recently did my first play and I loved it.
Grand Horizons was your first play?
It was my first professional play.
Wow.
When I got it, Jesse Tyler Ferguson was like, should I call them and let them know this is your first play? honestly, that's why like Lee Silverman and Bess Wohl, I was like, wait, really? Like, why are you so confident that I'm like, they were very much like, Ashley's the person for this part, like bring her in. Like we, you know, and it really did fit so well. I loved it, but I really didn't, you know, so it really was my first professional. I'd never done a play, but you know, I consider K-pop a play with music too.
Absolutely.
You know, and I don't, like, I think I learned so much from that show and that process, but I think if I could be in anything, can I also be a different person?
Yes.
My dream is to be Julie Andrews in the Sound of Music movie. Like the Sound of Music movie, I think is untouchable. It's like I think that was actually, I would consider my first show that I saw. Because I do think that that's what made me really love Rodgers and Hammerstein and music. And I wore that VCR down thin. Mm-hmm. And it was just so like to have an epic sweeping story like that. And that was like grounded in like a real thing. Like since I was little was my number one. So if I could be Julie Andrews in that, I think that would be a dream. But I also think that,
I just want to picture you with that haircut for a minute. Okay.
Oh gosh. Keep going. I don't think I could pull up anything as well as Julie Andrews. She's an icon to me. But I think one of the best experiences theatrically of my life was getting to be scene partner to Mira Mazzei when she just made her triumphant return in King and I, and just not only getting to watch her and listen to her every day, but like feel like being held by her. And like being her support and her being my support through that show and The King and I, I just loved her as a scene partner. And, you know, she came into the show, so we didn't get to rehearse together really or build something together. So if I could, my dream would have been to create a show with her and really, cause she was just like so smart, so generous, so fun, but disciplined. And like, you just knew you were in good hands, so generous, but also knows when to take her space and just understands every part of it. So I learned so much from that. And like, my favorite part of any show is like the building of it and the process of finding the characters together and finding the relationships, because that's the only way you can live in it 8 times a week is like, you can deepen these characters and their relationships, but you can't really widen it and within the scope of the story. So the rehearsal time is the most fun. And I think that's the time where we see the most like failure and growth in like building the story too. And I just think it would have, I mean, to be in like an original Sondheim show with like her would be a dream.
Well, that's kind of beautiful. I mean, it's interesting to talk with you about theater and your theater experiences, because you are having a big television experience right now. Yes, we got to see you on Emily in Paris. I've watched every episode. I loved it.
Just announced season 2 today.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's very exciting. I knew it was coming. I talked to Patricia Field not long ago, so I knew it was
coming. Really? Oh, yeah. The best. I mean, talk about, again, the icons who, like, you really, she doesn't have to be as kind as she is, because she's just, I would do anything and wear anything she says, but just the most collaborative. Like, that's
God. It's amazing. And Darren Star. I mean, so I'm sure you've got, I'm sure you've been asked this question numerous times, but because this is a theater lover show, what is the real difference between performing in a theatrical show and performing in a television show? Because you talked a lot about how some performances were the alchemy of the relationship had to happen while on stage because you didn't have a rehearsal time. Others, you grew up doing every sort of workshop and reading of it. Now with television, like, that process is pretty different. Though there is rehearsal, it's really about the camera and you too. So just fill us in a bit.
I mean, it's so funny. And people have asked me, which do you prefer? And, the ungrateful answer is the one that I'm not doing at the moment. And I also love the one I'm doing at the moment more, you know? I think it's so hard to compare, because they really, it's like asking which of your kids you like better or like something like that. It's just, they're so different. And I think the main thing is exactly what you're saying is, I mean, the reason I think theater is so sacred and the reason I love it so much is because, and the reason I also, the most heartbreaking part about it for me is the fleeting nature of it, which is that every show, every night is a different alchemy of the audience and cast, right? And the people working backstage. And it can just never be reproduced. And even if you have the same exact, you did a show with the same exact cast and the same exact audience 2 days in a row, every human has woken up the next day a different person, right? Yes. So it just can never be the same. And so there's something so beautiful about that. And that's why it's so special. That's why we're missing it so much. It just can't be recreated. But that's also like the saddest thing for me. Like I really, it's devastating for me when I have to leave a show or when a show closes. Yeah. Like, I'm that person who's crying the most because I get so nostalgic and I just can't believe, like, oh my gosh, like, it's never going to be this again. Yeah. Versus with film and TV, you say goodbye in a different way, meaning that, you know, I get to live with the characters, but within the same story on stage for a long period of time, if the show is successful, you know, and do that deepening thing, but not widening thing. But with film and TV, I remember there are some scenes in like Emily in Paris, and, you know, like, Lily comes from the film world, I come from the theater world, and we met on this TV world, and we would be in these costumes and be doing these scenes and like our banter and everything, we'd find it and we'd click and we'd find all these different rhythms, all these different ways in and out and discover all these things. And then they say cut for the last time, we're wrapped for the day. And I remember one day we were like, I can't believe we never are doing this again. Like, we're never doing this again. This is so crazy. You know, like, again, theater, it's, you have a, unless it's, you're in a show that only two people came to, you know, but like, you have a whole set of perspectives and audience that you're playing to at once. And on film, I really found that you really have to trust your scene partners and directors in a different kind of way, because you are, your only audience member is the lens.
Right. Let's talk about Girls 5 Eva before we end today. I actually call it Girls 5 Eva because that's...
Oh my God, hilarious.
That's actually what it says. But I remember as a kid when people used to write, I love you for EVA, I was like, you know, you just wrote, I love you for Eva. And people were like, ha ha ha, no, that's for Eva. Anyway.
Forever. I love that.
So Girls 5 Eva sounds amazing.
Yes.
Give us the headline.
I mean, it's like, this is why I can't even like articulate or manifest dreams anymore, because it's like these dream situations come out of, you know, like if I could have never even dreamt this scenario for myself. And again, it's because I think recently I've been like, I have so, you know, Grand Horizons being the first time I worked with both a female director and female writer. And just not navigating that process, and not saying that I've worked with the most incredible male directors and mentors and writers and producers too,
but it's different.
It was different, you know. Yeah. And I've been so excited by the female writers and directors in my life, and so like again to do this. The fact that, I mean, for me, the greatest compliment is not that, oh, this person was so good in this project, but is truly when people are lead with, oh, she's incredible to work with, I'd work with her again. And so the best compliment, the best part of getting this job for me was that Tina Fey and Jeff Richman were like, and their company was like, oh, we trust Ashley, we would love to work with her again, you know? Okay. So that is already the best part for me. I already know I'm coming into great hands. They've been such great mentors for me. But also the fact, like working with like Sarah Bareilles and Busy Phillips and Paula Pell and Renee Elise Goldberry, these are all women. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to add them to like my, like this community of big sisters that I've gained, you know, like, you know, Keegan has like Kelly and Marin and Ruthie, and, you know, Tales of the City, I had Ellen Page and Laura Linney. Oh my God, that would be my dream too. If me and Laura and Marin could be in a play together, that would be my, I would be set for life, truly.
All of us.
But I don't take it lightly that, again, like I have these like females who are just such amazing role models to me as like people, as mothers, as like artists. Like I think the luckiest part for me is getting to be in their vicinity, and also like be a support for them. Like I'm somebody who they were excited to work with and trust too. But like also, like, being in a 90s girls band is my ultimate. We've only filmed the pilot so far, but even like some of the music videos, and like I'm playing a character named Ashley, and it's just like the best. It is the best time.
Ashley, we have a surprise section that we don't tell our guests about. And it is a lightning round in which I say the name of a musical, you say the name of the emotional theme that you think of right away.
Wait, what? I don't even remember any emotions.
I know, none of us do. But it's going to come. It's going to be instinctual, I promise you.
Got it. Okay.
Here we go.
Uh-huh.
Rent.
Oh, what's that? Oh my God, what's the word? Like angsty.
Oliver.
Oh, I'm the first thing I'm doing is like, well, once more, I'm like quoting it in my head. What's an emotion? I mean, youth is not an emotion.
No, that is. That's good.
Okay.
Sweeney Todd.
Oh, scary.
Pippin.
Curious?
Funny Girl.
Gumption.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Loyalty? I don't know.
Yeah.
Family?
Company.
What's the word for like self-worth or self-discovery?
Perfect.
Figuring out who you are.
Yeah. Into the Woods.
Wait, why am I so bad at this game? I just don't understand what emotions are. Into the Woods is like, what emotion is, what's the emotional theme?
One is alone. How about
no
that?
No one is alone. No, I know. That's, I keep on thinking of song titles. Like,
that's
I
can okay.
A song title game.
We have a song title lightning round, but I think, do you have time to do that one? We can do that one if you'd rather.
Yes, go ahead. Am I so bad at this? I mean, it's probably entertaining for people. I really want to think of the emotion that I associate with Into the Woods. It's very like, it makes my heart swell, but I don't know what that emotion is.
There's more than what you see. There's more there than what you see. I mean, truly, the idea is like so many of these shows from our upbringing actually mean different things to us at different points in our life.
No, totally.
And that's what I love about like the lightning round, because it can change over time too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, we're out of time and I adored every minute of this hour. So thank you for being here and for being you.
Thank you for having me. This has been very fun.
I studied all the pictures and magazines and books. I memorized the subway map too.
My First Show is produced by Josh Altman, MEP, Dory Berenstein, and Alan Seals, and is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. This episode was edited by Derek Gunther. Special thanks to Leslie Papa and Whitney Holden-Gore at Vivacity Media Group. For more info about the podcast, visit bpn.fm/myfirstshow. Follow me on Instagram at Eva R. Price. Wants to roam,
but I do, though they wonder why. They said I would soon be good and lonely. They said I would sing the homesick blues. So I always have this ticket in my pocket, a ticket home in my pocket, to do with as I choose. Burn the bridge, bet the store, baby's coming home no more. Not for the life of me. Break the lock, post my bail, done my time, I'm out of jail. Not for the life of me. A life that's gotta be more than a one-night town where the light is always red. Gotta be more than an old ghost town where the ghost ain't even dead. Clap your hands just because, don't you know that where I am ain't where I was. Not for the life of me. Bow down, yo. Not for the life of. Not for the life of. Not for the life of me.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.